It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And welcome to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and we'd love to hear from you about your questions, too. And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Good
morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about asset protection in the context of long-term health care planning.
Mm-hmm.
I think last week, one of the things that we talked about last week and ended up on the program was we were talking about the sanction period.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to correct one thing that I said because I went back and looked at that. What I indicated was that when you transfer assets, like, for example, folks sometimes ask the question, can I just put my house and my kids' name? Can I give them money? Can I, deplete what I have so that, I may become eligible for the long-term care adult Medicaid by just depleting those assets? Well, and last week I talked about the fact that, you can't do that, but the look-back period is 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that's the case. And it has been for a period of time that what you divide the value of the gift by is $5,500.
Right.
Medicaid has looked at that as, the average cost of care. But I indicated on the radio program last week as we were speaking that that number does increase with time because the cost of care goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And as Cecil and I indicated, we're normally seeing about $6,000 or $7,000 per month, not $5,500
right.
these days. And that number has gone up. It's 6,300 now.
Okay.
So when I indicated 55 last week and
right.
gave the explanation that if we had a $55,000 transfer, or then you divide it, by 5,500, it's a 10-month sanction. It would have to be a 63,000 dollar transfer. So 63
makes about 8.25.
Yeah, a little bit different. So anyway, just wanted to be up to date. That's one of those kind of things in the law.
It's a moving target.
That's one of those things in the law that we talk about all the time. I mean,
yeah.
these things don't stay exactly the same because the cost of care goes up, and obviously we have to deal with that quite frequently. But 6,300 is where we are currently.
Okay,
yeah.
Ben. This is a good place to start today's program in that, it is just an everyday occurrence, really, that folks will call wanting to put their property, their land, that is, their home, into their children's names. Many times the request is just to the paralegals or the secretary or receptionist. I would like for you to get Mr. Harvell to prepare a deed to deed my home on over to my children.
Right.
And it's just as simple and innocent as that. And we really need to talk about that for a moment. That is a real problem for a number of reasons. And let's talk about those. First of all, we always talk about the devil is in the details. There is a way to transfer your property to your children in a mechanism whereby it will not get trapped in, the nursing home saga, if
right.
you will.
Right.
But it is not through just a simple quitclaim deed or any other kind of deed, just directly to the children. First of all, there are tax consequences with deeding your property to your children because you now have lost the step up in basis because you did an inter vivos or during life deed to your children. Secondly, once you put your property in the name of your children, the property now, your home, is subject to the twists and turns of your child's life.
Right.
So suppose, God forbid, that child dies.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose that child has a bankruptcy. Suppose that child has a divorce. Suppose that child has its own very significant creditor due to a lawsuit, if you will, or a terrible sickness or anything of that nature. We don't want to put our client's property in a posture whereby it's subject to another person's life events.
Yeah, right.
Okay? It's distressing to have, a creditor knock on the door for your children when you think you still own your home. We understand the intention here, which is to get the house out of our name, into the name of the children. But the devil is in the details. This is not the way to do it. So we do not like the idea of deeding the home directly over to the children, notwithstanding, finally, one of the most major red flags to that technique is going to be the 5-year look back rule.
Mm-hmm.
When you just deed the property in its entirety, fee simple ownership to your children, you're going to trigger the 5-year look back rule. What happens in our office a lot is that we find these deeds, and a year or two or 3 years later, the client is told that there has been a problem in deeding the property to their children 2 or 3 years ago, and we are reversing that transaction and starting over again from the beginning.
Right.
So you do not want to just directly deed your property to your children. I hope our listeners are hearing that, and it always helps to understand why. And I gave the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
Tax reasons, creditor reasons, twists and turns of life of the children reasons, not to mention the 5-year look back rule. What is appropriate, the transfer is appropriate, is to create a trust for the benefit of yourself and your spouse, your husband and wife, if you still have your spouse living. And then, of course, have that trust parallel the language of the will that eventually the property, of course, vests in the children.
Right.
Or whatever your will might say.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it only vests in one child, or maybe it vests in the grandchildren. Again, let's parallel the will.
Or something else entirely. Yeah,
something else entirely.
Yeah.
And then, of course, transfer the property in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, is not going to trigger the 5-year look-back rule. There's going to be a reservation of a life estate, which will keep the tax basis well in place, the step-up in tax basis. And all of those other reasons that I mentioned are not going to be applicable because the property is owned in an entity that is controlled by the parent.
Mm-hmm.
Not an entity that is subject to the twists and turns of the children.
All right. So, again, that is such a common thing.
I
know I run into it with elderly folks in my church. Mm-hmm. They want to do that. And always you've actually come to our church to talk to them about that.
And we'll come again.
Yeah. This is a really common thing.
You're correct. I'm glad we hit on it first thing this morning right out of the gate here on this Tuesday morning because it is probably one of the most common things that we have to discuss with clients. It's kind of the beginning. Well, just go ahead and deed my property over to my children.
Right.
Most folks obviously have spent a lifetime paying on that mortgage, and maybe they have it paid off, or maybe this is family property. It's been in the family forever. So, you know, for most of us, you know, the most valuable asset we have is going to be that home. So it makes sense that these people, these clients, you know, are interested in transferring their property to whomever they would want it to go to under their will, you know, their children, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But like Cecil indicated, the devil is really in those details. You know, another thing that we sometimes see when we're talking about transferring real property to the kids is if that gets done and there's not that retention of the life estate, which Cecil just mentioned, but that's, you know, primarily for a retention of the step up in tax basis issue, then let's say that child or the children passed away, then really the parent really legally has no right to stay in that home in the event there's a problem in the family. I mean, let's say that, yeah, okay, fine, we're going to transfer the property over to our kids. We trust our kids, but let's say that, you know, the child passes away and leaves that property to the spouse. And maybe we don't get along with that spouse quite as much, the in-law.
Plenty of things. A child's heavily in debt or somebody else.
Right.
All kinds of things.
So all of the 5 or 6 reasons that Cecil just gave with regard to why you should not just transfer the property to the children, but if you're interested in protecting that property, there's a way to do it. Forget those.
Mm-hmm.
Just make sure you don't put yourself in a position where you may not be able to stay in your home.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right. That's, right.
That's another reason, obviously, where, you know, the rubber hits the road with regard to these things. But it is true that we get this question, you know, quite frequently. And, you know, what this question spins off into is a bigger discussion with regard to what our goals, what are we trying to accomplish? Mm-hmm. And usually what folks are trying to accomplish is they're just wanting to make sure that we protect that biggest asset, the one we've been paying for forever,
right?
Or that, that family property. And I've heard a lot of things out here in church, or mm-hmm. I've heard it, you know, yeah, on the street.
Yeah,
I've heard it somewhere. There's
yeah.
something we need to do. And I think I just want to put the property over my kid's name. Well, let's get into the details and understand what we're doing and do it the right way.
Yeah, you know, in fact, a mentor of mine did that with his property, but then and did not arrange for the life estate or anything else, just deeded it over and kept paying on the mortgages, et cetera, paid it off. But it was he was blessed, I guess, because it was about 10 years before he eventually passed away.
Right.
So he didn't have that 5-year period.
Well, he didn't
right,
have,
that's right.
He didn't have yep. the 5-year rule based on, as you say, for fortunate and really, if you will, gratuitous circumstances.
Yeah, right.
But he could have had a circumstance where goodness gracious, he lost a child.
Yeah.
And their interest of his home is then in their estate. He could have had a circumstance where the child was subject to some sort of grave liability.
Mm-hmm.
All of those kinds of things. Those are real traps.
Right. And we'll have more to come in a moment here. If you'd like to ask a question, you can call right now and do that.
Call me at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, and Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. And thanks for joining us here today. And we're talking about protecting assets.
Yeah, we'll continue here, Ben. So what Wes and I do in these files is that we absolutely begin with interviewing the client significantly relative to their assets as to real property.
Mm-hmm.
And real property in the state of North Carolina is any kind of land. Land, lot, condominium, anything of a land nature or attached
to
pertinent
land.
thereto.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
All right. And we deal with that much in the way that we've just discussed,
mm-hmm.
okay? In terms of transferring it most likely to the use of some different kinds of trust that will not frustrate in any way the testamentary intent of the client.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing, of course, is one can imagine we get that done. We get that. That gets us now to about second base. Now we've got to talk with the client about their liquidity. And liquidity, like real property, kind of has a definition. Liquidity means anything else, Ben.
Right.
It can be a CD. It can be an IRA. It can be an annuity. It can be cash value in a life insurance policy. Okay. Got a call. Well,
yeah, we have a caller, Ron in Beaufort, with a question. Hi, Ron.
Hi there. Yes. We took a private mortgage out on our house in New York, and one of the deals we had to do is take out so many dollars in a loan for stocks and bonds, which eventually paid for the house. But he also had us put the house in a family trust where we didn't really own it, and we were just renters. We would have to write a check every month to this family trust, and, you know, basically this way it kept it out of the supposedly kept it out of taxes when we passed, because we were basically renters,
mm-hmm.
but we were part of the trust. How does that work? Can I do that now?
Well, it sounds like, Ron, that this was a strategy, and most likely a good one, but that was put into place so as to benefit you and your family relative to New York law. New York is one of those states where probate is very, very onerous, burdensome, expensive. There are there are levels of cost to probate that we just simply do not have in the state of North Carolina. And as a result of that, what we lawyers here in North Carolina see when we are talking to New York folks or New Jersey folks, there are other states, by the way. Michigan is a big one. California, Florida, Texas, but certainly New York, whereby most folks are encouraged to use one of these kinds of documents such as you call a family trust. So where is this property located? Here in North Carolina?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Beaufort.
Okay. But who really owns the property? I mean, I know the trust does.
My wife and I do, but we just paid, my brother and I were executors for three estates, and the estates paid $1.1 million in taxes mm-hmm. in New York, and it basically, almost wiped out all three estates. So we just don't want to have that happen when we pass, because we do have,
this family trust, though, was it created in New York or was it created here in North Carolina?
Back then we sold the house. Since then it was created in New York, but I'm looking, want to do the same thing here when my kids get our real property, that it's like, okay, thanks for the $2.50 after everything's paid for.
Yeah, right? I understand completely. Well, Ron, you need to, you there's a solution to your questions. There is a document, no question about it, and very likely it might be a trust that would satisfy the objectives that you just set forward. But you need, it appears, to consult with a lawyer, here in the state of North Carolina, because that's where you and your wife are now living, and that is where the property is located, to begin to put together the right kind of document that's going to fit and achieve those objectives.
Mm-hmm. Can it be done, though? I mean, where they're not paying all this inheritance?
Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. Absolutely, it can be done.
Right.
Absolutely. We do it every day to the week. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
One of the best things you've done is moved to North Carolina. it's a little more expensive to die with probate assets in New York as opposed to North Carolina.
But no, Ron, I'm sorry I didn't answer it more clearly. Absolutely.
No problem.
Estate tax mitigation in this state can be done, okay? And also probate mitigation. And, of course, as we're talking about today, asset protection planning. All of these are goals for various clients, and you and your wife have your goals and objectives. You sit down with your lawyer, you establish what those objectives are, and then the documents would be tailored, done specific to meet those objectives for you, the client, based on your factual circumstances.
Ron, if you just listen for a little bit longer, we'll discuss this a little bit further, and I think it'll bring it all together for you.
All right.
Okay, great. I will.
All right, thanks, Ron.
Thank
Ron.
You.
Thanks. This is Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, and Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. You can find them online at harvellandcollins.com and call for an appointment at 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. All right, we're going to help Ron out a little bit here.
Right, so like I indicated that when Ron was on the line, excuse me, when we're talking about, the complications of basically dying mm-hmm. and what we have to deal with when we're talking about taxes, probate expenses, so on and so forth, many times we have clients who relocate to this area who are used to the way things were, mm-hmm. maybe in Florida or New York or wherever it may be. And they're used to it maybe as it relates to what they've dealt with in their family before,
mm-hmm.
what their parents' probate was like, dealing with an attorney, in New York and dealing with the court there, so on and so forth. But the good news is that, the days past mm-hmm. that we dealt with that in New York, they're going to be much simpler in North Carolina. And I think probably the first place to start with that is to realize that when we're dealing with the probate of an estate, it's where basically you reside upon your death. So mm-hmm. in the event that Ron and his family are now relocated here, or moved here, or maybe they've always been here, but nevertheless, they live here.
Right.
The probate court that would have jurisdiction over the estate of, you know, his estate, his wife's estate would be here in North Carolina. So, given the fact that, you know, what we can glean from the conversation with Ron, it appears that his family in New York had a lot of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
They probably had sounded like a relatively sizable estate.
Yeah, three estates.
Didn't get into that detail, but probably. The last death of the parent was at a time when the estate tax was much higher than it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
The amount due. So the credit, as it relates to the tax is so high now that most estates that we deal with in North Carolina, we don't have any estate tax to deal with. And that may be reading between the lines, one of the biggest issues you had.
Mm-hmm.
And then next, the probate expenses, in North Carolina as compared to New York are just much lower.
Mm-hmm.
So, given the fact that, you know, his family is here and his estate, now is most likely underneath that unified tax credit amount for tax purposes, the probate expenses are simpler. His estate plan is going to be much simpler as well. But that's the key right there, plan.
Right.
He does need to put in place a plan. He does need to you know, meet with Cecil, for example, or me or whatever, a good attorney who does estate planning so that his plan is put in place. But the good news for Ron is almost certainly, now we don't have all the details, but almost certainly that these expenses that his family dealt with years ago in New
mm-hmm.
York, he's really going to have just about none of those,
mm-hmm.
As it relates to the probate and administration of his estate when he and his wife eventually pass away. So that's, it's more of a fact that we're in a jurisdiction that's easier to deal with
mm-hmm.
and the tax laws have changed.
Yeah.
So you take those two things into consideration. As long as he puts an appropriate plan together with, you know, a good attorney, then it should be pretty lickety split for him, pretty easy.
Yeah. In other words, this is a very doable thing, as you said. They do it every day of the week, and
that's
this
right.
is a kind of estate planning that is actually that we are here for to demystify the
right.
those. Concerns. And so here on this Halloween day, it's not quite so scary.
Oh, it is Halloween, isn't it?
It shouldn't be so scary to face these
No,
facts.
No. We are not scary. We are not
right.
scary.
Right.
Okay. You know, Ben, planning is everything.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but say, you know, to our listeners, find a lawyer. Go on the internet. Look at the lawyer reviews that are on Google. Look at lawyers.com, which mm-hmm. keeps up with lawyers and their ratings and their reviews, and make an appointment with a good lawyer.
Okay.
Most likely, one more sentence, most likely the initial consultation, there will be no charge.
Right.
And then the lawyer is able to give an estimate, and then you go from there.
If you want to find out more about the Harvell & Collins services, you can go online to harvellandcollins.com. Give them a call, 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.